regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am so glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking some inside baseball stuff. Well, not in terms of baseball, but politics, right? So we're going to talk about what's going on Capitol Hill with the big, beautiful bill, the reconciliation bill that as of right now would lower the $200 transfer tax on suppressors down to zero, but would keep suppressors on the National Firearms Act. So those purchasing suppressors would still have to essentially register those items with the federal government, go through expanded background checks, submit their fingerprints. We talked yesterday with John Comerford, NRA ILA's executive director, about the push to replace that current language in the mega bill with Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act, which would simply remove suppressors from the NFA. And you know, as we talked with John yesterday, he talked about some of the challenges, particularly coming from the Senate side of things, right? So the Byrd Rule appears to be one of the major stumbling blocks in terms of expanding the efforts to deregulate suppressors. I mean, let's just call that what it is, right? So the Byrd Rule requires essentially it's basically designed to prevent policy changes from being enacted through budgetary bills. It's supposed to be, you know, limited again to things with a fiscal impact. Now, as groups like GOA have noted, removing suppressors from the NFA would, in fact, also have a budgetary impact, just like reducing the transfer tax down to zero. So it is an open question, and I think Comerford even said that, you know, he believes that there are ways to include Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act in this mega bill without violating the Byrd Rule. But that is one of the objections that that we have heard from folks on Capitol Hill who, let's say, who want to stop with lowering the tax down to zero. I think that there is an appetite among the Republican caucus, at least most of the Republican caucus, to do something about suppressors. The disagreement appears to be, again, how far to go. So I have not found anybody who's willing to go on the record with me. I've had a couple of background conversations with folks who have said, you know, they expressed some frustration, I guess, with the push to deregulate and remove suppressors from the NFA. And so I'm not endorsing their arguments, but I did want to kind of go through what I have been told. I'll offer my commentary to this as well. Again, there is the Byrd Rule objection, right? Which, again, I mean, that's ultimately going to be up to the Senate parliamentarian to make that ruling. And then it's going to be up to Senate leadership as to whether or not to accept a parliamentarian's ruling that, that you know, might go against what gun owners are asking for. That is something that I think we're going to have to deal with a little bit later on down the road, not too far down the road, because Speaker Mike Johnson is hoping for a floor vote on the mega bill in the House early next week. And then the reconciliation bill would move over to the Senate. We know that there are going to be some changes, right? This is the other aspect of this, is that this isn't happening. The discussion about suppressors is not happening in a vacuum. If you look at the headlines, Republicans, there are a number of points of discussion and disagreement among various groups of Republicans, right? So the House Freedom Caucus doesn't believe that cuts to Medicaid go far enough. They want to see more cuts. You've got another group of Republicans who are, you know, putting together this bill, who've said, if we do more than that, we are risking our majorities in the midterms. We need to be careful with what we're doing here. You've got the discussions going on about the SALT deductions, and you've got the New York contingent and a couple of members of California's congressional delegation who are Republicans as well, who want to see those SALT limits expanded. And that, again, is another point of discussion that frankly, at this point, might derail House passage of the mega bill. So with those areas of disagreement, the discussions about the suppressor language, I mean, for gun owners and Second Amendment advocates, obviously that's a really important conversation to have, right? I think among the GOP caucus in general, it is more of a tertiary concern. It is not necessarily one of the hot button issues, although that could change. And in fact, I think with a real push by gun owners, it can change, and we can actually elevate this to one of those topics of discussion that is of primary concern to the Republican caucus. I heard from one source on Capitol Hill yesterday who said that one Republican member of Congress, and I won't name names, but they had received 2,800 contacts from constituents in one 24-hour period, specifically about the suppressor language. Now, that's big. And again, that causes a Congress critter to sit up and take notice that, okay, this is important to the people who've put me here, right? So I would encourage you, if you want to see Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act included in this budget reconciliation bill, you want to see suppressors removed from the NFA altogether and not just the tax taken down to zero, it is incumbent on you to make those contacts. I would say, especially, again, if you've got a Republican member of Congress, if you are saddled with a anti-gun Democrat, you're right. Reaching out via email, calling their office, probably not going to do much. But if you have a Republican member of Congress, it is critically important that they hear from you right now. And they know that this is one of your priorities, because you can help shape these discussions going forward. And there is, again, some disagreement among, I think, a handful of Republicans who don't want Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act included in this budget bill. These are the Second Amendment squishes in the GOP, quite frankly. But unfortunately, because of the slim majorities in both the House and the Senate, it doesn't take many Republicans to gum up the works. Half a dozen members of Congress objecting to a particular provision can create a huge headache for Speaker Johnson and Senate leadership and those who are trying to cobble together what Donald Trump has called this big, beautiful bill. So we have to, again, I think as gun owners, it's incumbent on us to make sure that our voices are heard on this issue. And the more of us that are in contact with our representatives, then the better the chances are that those representatives can, if not persuade their squishy colleagues to go along, they at least will have the numbers to say, look, this is clearly what our constituents want and demand. This is an issue for them. So we have to go further. And it may provide those, I wouldn't even say the squishes, but maybe they go along to get along caucus, to get a little steel in their spine and say, no, this is something actually that we have to move forward on, a half measure, even if it is an improvement. And I will admit, this is something that John Comerford said yesterday, that reducing the NFA tax from $200 to $0 for suppressors would be the first time, I think, in more than, 65 years that taxes on NFA items would be reduced by Congress. That in itself should be acknowledged as an important step. And I don't want to minimize that. But, as John and I were talking about yesterday, there is a feeling among gun owners that, listen, we have both the House and the Senate right now. We have the White House. This is the best opportunity that we may have in decades to make substantive changes. And why wouldn't we take full advantage of that opportunity? Why would we settle for half measures when we have the chance to go big on these issues? Now, one of the other objections that I've heard is that what goes around, basically can be summed up as what goes around comes around, right? So if you want to use the reconciliation process to remove suppressors from the NFA, does that open the door for Democrats to use the reconciliation process to expand the NFA when they are in a position to do so? If you can use a budget bill to remove suppressors from the National Firearms Act, could you then use a budget bill to place AR-15s or a body of semi-automatic long guns under the auspices of the NFA? Could you use a budget bill to create a new restricted item and impose a new tax on commonly owned firearms? That is, I think, a legitimate concern. However, there's nothing stopping Democrats from trying that in the future, no matter what Republicans do with this particular bill. Right? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be, well, what comes around goes around. Even if Republicans decide, okay, we're going to take this more modest step of reducing taxes on this existing item, but keep that item under the auspices of the NFA, there would be nothing stopping anti-gun Democrats, when they are in charge of the reconciliation process, from saying, you know what, we're going to try to do what those ardent Second Amendment supporters wanted to do a couple of years ago, only we're going to do it in terms of putting more restrictions on gun owners and adding to the NFA's restricted items without 60 votes in the Senate, with just a bare minimum vote. And as part of a much broader budget bill that you either object to in whole or you support in whole, no matter what you may feel about various provisions. I understand that concern, but I think that that concern exists regardless of what happens with this particular reconciliation bill. I have also heard, and you may be hearing from my rooster, Mario, who has strong thoughts on this issue. I've also heard that, when the Hearing Protection Act was scheduled to come up for a standalone vote in the Senate a couple of years ago, Democrats like Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand had vowed that they would filibuster that bill, which apparently is one of the reasons why it did not get brought up. And what I have heard is that they would likely do the same thing if Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act is included in this budget reconciliation bill. Again, that may be a valid concern, but I would say that the odds of a Democrat filibuster of this bill in the Senate are pretty high, regardless of what the language regarding suppressors looks like. Because again, that's not going to be the only objection that Democrats have to whatever it is that Republicans come up with and pass out of the House. So to allow this bill to remain as is, which again is still representative of an improvement over the status quo, but to not include Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act, because you're concerned that Democrats might filibuster the mega bill, I'm sorry. I just don't really buy that as a valid excuse, because again, there are going to be so many components of this bill that Democrats object to. If you wrote a bill that Democrats did not object to, frankly, you would probably have a bill that many Republicans would object to. So there is going to be a fight in the Senate over whatever comes out of the House. We know that. I mean, there are... I won't say a fight, but there are definitely disagreements taking place right now between House Republicans and Senate Republicans. There are disagreements taking place between some groups of House Republicans over what this bill is going to look like. And I don't think that you can allow that to stand in the way of, again, getting as much as you can out of the process, right? To me, the argument that, well, we're not sure we can get every Republican to go along is a stronger argument than, well, we're afraid that Chuck Schumer is going to stand up there and filibuster the bill. Okay, we can't control what Schumer does. Nah, it's an open question as to whether or not Speaker Johnson can actually control what the entirety of the GOP caucus in the House does, too. And again, given the back and forth and the discussions and the disagreements that we've seen, I think it's going to be a very open question as to whether or not Speaker Johnson can herd these cats and get them moving in one direction on the reconciliation bill. So, I wanted to present those, I guess, arguments that I've been hearing about why gun owners should just be happy with what has emerged from the House Ways and Means Committee, be satisfied with the language that brings the tax on suppressors down to zero from $200. I think that I've presented it in a fair way based on what I have heard. But, and again, I do understand some political realities here. I do. I get that. And I acknowledge that the language that has come out of the House Ways and Means Committee, as is an improvement over the status quo. Having said that, my position is still that gun owners should be fighting to make these protections as strong as possible. Yes, to include Section 2 of the Hearing Protection Act in the reconciliation bill. Yes, to deregulating suppressors and removing them from the National Firearms Act. Are Democrats going to raise hell about it? Sure. But they're already raising hell about lowering the tax down from $100 to zero. Right? We had a member of Congress, Representative Horford, I believe it was, wondered, who asked for this? The assassination lobby? I mean, Giffords is out there saying this is going to lead to more criminals getting a hold of suppressors, even though, again, as is, the only thing that's changed is that it's going to be a little bit cheaper to acquire a suppressor. So they're already going to use this to try to demonize Republicans. You're not getting away from that. So if, you know, your hope is, well, if we just keep the language as is, then maybe we have less of a headache. It's not going to be as controversial. No, Democrats are going to make it as controversial as possible. And the answer to those questions is simple. No, it's not the assassination lobby that's asking for this, any more than it was the assassination lobby that wanted the ATF to acquire suppressors. Again, we talked about this with Lee Williams on the program earlier this week. The ATF buying suppressors for an untold number of agents for their health and safety. Because suppressors don't eliminate the sound of a gunshot, but they do suppress the sound of a gunshot. They lower that decibel level down to a more reasonable amount of noise. And that benefits the hearing of the gun owner. I have, you know, as I said with Lee when we were talking with him too, I think there's a good neighbor argument to suppressors. I do not mind hearing, in fact, I like hearing the sound of my neighbors shooting most weekends. But I've got one neighbor in particular who shoots pretty darn close to my house. It's a big, loud boom every time he fires his rifle. It freaks my dog out. She doesn't like it. Ended up buying a thunder shirt for her. She doesn't like thunderstorms either. Again, that's my issue to deal with. But would I be happier if that sound was muffled a little bit? Heck yeah, I would. And I think that it would benefit a lot of gun clubs that are threatened because new neighbors move in. They don't like the sound of gunshots on the weekend or during the weeknight, right? Lowering that sound level is, I think, a good neighbor policy. And it allows us, at least theoretically, to expand those locations, or at least to preserve those locations where we can shoot recreationally, where we can shoot competitively, where we can get the training that supposedly even the gun control advocates want us to have, right? Broadening the use of suppressors helps from that aspect as well. So there is a health benefit, but there is also, I think, a training benefit to deregulating suppressors, to making them more commonly available. And Republicans, quite frankly, need to be able to have those discussions. So when somebody says, oh, who's asking for this? The assassination lobby? You can say, no, your neighbor is asking for this. No, your gun club president is asking for this. No, law enforcement is asking for these items. And if police or ATF agents want to have suppressors to protect their hearing, then why shouldn't my constituents also be able to access those suppressors without having to jump through as many hoops and hurdles as they do at the moment? There is a way to have this conversation that I think demythologizes suppressors, that cuts through the fear-mongering of the Democrats. It's just that Republicans have to be willing to have that conversation. And if and listen, I'll be honest with them. If there are members of Congress who don't know much about this issue, who don't know how to talk about this issue, reach out to Second Amendment groups like the NRA or GOA or SAF or FPC. They'll be happy to help explain this issue to you in a way that you can then talk about in the well of the House or the Senate or with angry constituents who've bought into the lies of the anti-gun crowd. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be fearful. You don't have to be silent on the issue of deregulating suppressors and the importance of allowing more Americans to have access to those accessories. So, again, that's sort of where the side that says, you know, let's just stick with lowering this to zero is coming from. At least that's my understanding of where that side is coming from. Again, we talked with John Comerford yesterday. He said that the Rules Committee is probably the next best place to change the existing language that came out of the House Ways and Means Committee. We know that there are going to be changes. We know that there are discussions ongoing about what this bill is going to look like when it gets to the floor, not just again with suppressors, but on a host of other issues. So right now, the most important thing is to keep up the pressure, to keep up the contacts, to keep talking to your representative in particular, but your senators too, and let them know that this is, in fact, an issue that is important to you. It is not something where you want to see them take a half measure, but you do want to see them enact the substantive, fundamental reforms that we thought we were voting for last November. All right, the other inside baseball topic I wanted to get to today, and it's not directly related to gun control, although it certainly will have an impact on the Democratic Party and its embrace of gun control, and that would be the the election of David Hogg as DNC vice chair and the decision by the DNC to, in essence, have a do-over on the vote for David Hogg and Malcolm Kenyatta. David Hogg has said this is the result of his work to unseat incumbent Democrats, to replace, you know, longstanding Democrats with fresh faces, and to retool the Democratic Party. He was on, I think, Bill Maher the other day, and he talked about how, you know, the Democrat Party needs to be able to connect with young men who just want to party, and I think his phrase was get laid. Well, Malcolm Kenyatta, who is also subject to this re-vote, has come out in staunch disagreement with David Hogg's version of events, which is, I think, fascinating. So the website and magazine, The Advocate, had a story about this, saying that the news about the DNC's decision made headlines, specifically around Hogg. But Malcolm Kenyatta said Hogg's comments are misleading and self-serving. In an interview with The Advocate on Tuesday, Kenyatta said, I think the average person has little to no interest in internal party bullshit. But if we are going to have a conversation about internal party BS, we need to at least tell the truth about what's happening and not allow one individual to hijack the conversation to push a narrative about himself that's completely divorced from the facts. That individual, Kenyatta said, is David Hogg. Kenyatta also took to social media this week to call out both Hogg and the DNC, noting that he received more raw votes than any other candidate in the February election and claimed that the facts don't support Hogg's narrative. Pass the popcorn. I am here for this infighting. And I love this comment from Malcolm Kenyatta. He said, Hogg has been allowed to flood the zone with misinformation about how this is going on and painting himself as the victim. Now, Kenyatta went on to say the victims here are people who are losing their health care. The only victims here are people who are losing their housing. The victims here are working families that are paying more than they should be paying at the pump for baby supplies, for everything because of this trade war. So, you know, he wants to turn it back on Trump and Republicans and make it less about Hogg. But again, he's also accusing Hogg of making it all about himself, which gun owners have been saying for years that that's what David Hogg's whole shtick is. It is about self-promotion. And that goes back to his early days with March for Our Lives. And it has continued pretty much unabated ever since. Now, Malcolm Kenyatta, who again is also subject to this revote, says that he disagrees with that decision, but he accepts it. He says this committee had the right to decide. They did decide. That's how things go. And I disagree with their decisions and I'm going to abide by them. But what I'm not going to do is spend a bunch of time saying that I'm the victim when this is not about anybody being the victim. So Kenyatta says that, you know, Hogg claims that this was, again, all about his efforts to unseat incumbents. I apologize for Mario, by the way. He's just out of control today. But Kenyatta pointed out that the decision to reopen this voting process, he said, originated in early February, which was before Hogg really sent out his press release about, you know, oh, they're taking steps to remove me because of my political activism. He says that the media's fixation on Hogg has distorted the stakes. It ignored the work being done by activists like himself. He said that focusing on one person has led the DNC to ignore, quote, the real work we need to do to bring this party together to address the seriousness of this moment. And he wants Democrats and journalists to center the discussion, again, around Republicans, around the Trump administration, and not about David Hogg. There is, I think, you know, again, a broader discussion about whether or not the DNC and its committee chair people should be neutral in primary elections. David Hogg, again, obviously does not want that to be the case. But I was just fascinated by the fact that the other person, who, again, is subject to a revote here, the DNC, has had enough of David Hogg. Like, so many people, I think, have had enough of David Hogg. And calling him out for being self-serving, calling him out for his self-proclaimed victimhood, calling Hogg out for making it all about himself, self-promotion, self-aggrandizement. I, you know, it is rare to find bipartisan accord these days, but I think maybe that is one area where, at least some Democrats and many Republicans, and maybe even some gun control activists and Second Amendment supporters can find some common ground. All right, moving on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. Let's start there. I will warn you, if you have high blood pressure, take your pill, have a seat, because this one is going to absolutely infuriate you. Headline from the New York Post. Illegal migrant, 15, gets probation and must go to school after killing Colorado rehab worker, age 24, in a high-speed crash. So here you have somebody who was not even old enough to get behind the wheel of a car, not eligible to get behind the wheel of a car because they're not in this country legally, offered a plea bargain in Colorado, you know, the same state that's going after lawful gun owners for possessing commonly owned firearms while turning a blind eye to the rise in violent crimes across the state. And you did, I mean, the results are stuff like this. As the New York Post writes, a 15-year-old illegal immigrant who killed a Colorado drug rehab worker in a high-speed crash in a residential neighborhood was given a slap on the wrist by a Democratic prosecutor who had been endorsed by several prominent party members. The juvenile, who was a native of Colombia, cannot be named because of state law. He was, again, tried as a juvenile, was sentenced to 2 years probation and 100 hours of community service for killing Caitlin Weaver in July of 2024. According to the New York Post, Arapahoe County DA Amy Patton offered the teen a plea deal. So long as he admitted guilt in the crash, promised to attend school, and swore that he wouldn't break any more laws. According to CBS News Colorado, the 15-year-old was driving his mom's Jeep Cherokee at over 90 miles an hour on a street that was posted 45 when he slammed into Weaver's Volkswagen in Aurora. Caitlin Weaver, who was 24, was killed instantly, according to her dad, John. She had been speaking with her boyfriend on speakerphone when she stopped at a stop sign, and then she crossed into the intersection, was T-boned by the Cherokee driven by that 15-year-old illegal immigrant. John Weaver, her dad, said she didn't even see him coming. That's how fast he was going. She spent 2 days in the hospital before her parents took her off of life support, donated her organs. The 15-year-old, who again did not have a driver's license, also had other friends with him, I guess, in the car at the time of the crash. He was charged with vehicular homicide. According to CBS in Denver, his mom told investigators that she planned to move him back to Colombia after the accident, but he has since filed for asylum in the United States. John Weaver, father of the victim here, says that he was expecting this case to go to trial until Patton was elected DA. John Weaver said the DA's office said this would be a no plea deal case. They were not going to offer anything, any concession. But then the Democrat got elected, and that changed. And he wants to know why. He said if he had taken a firearm and recklessly just shot it and killed someone, this would be a different case. They'd be pushing it completely differently. There's no deterrence. Yeah, I think that's right. Because, again, Democrats are obsessed with guns, not crime. You kill somebody behind the wheel of a car, they don't see that as the same as killing somebody with a firearm. One is much more serious, even though we're still talking about the loss of a human life. So, yeah, if this 15-year-old illegal immigrant had shot and killed Caitlin Weaver, you know, I would say probably wouldn't have been offered a plea bargain. I don't know, because, again, you also have to run headlong into the reality that Democrats in Colorado in particular don't want to put criminal offenses on the books. They don't want to put criminals behind bars. So even if a gun had been used, I don't know that a plea bargain would not have been offered. I don't know. I think it's less likely that one would have been offered. But I don't blame John Weaver for being angry. He said, immigration and the criminal justice system and all these things landed together one day in Aurora. And now I sit here today without a daughter. Yeah. Yeah. And now he has to live with the fact that the teenager who killed his daughter is getting off with a slap on the wrist. Thanks again to the Democratic prosecutor in Arapahoe County, Colorado. Now, on to today's armed citizen story from Evansville, Indiana, where the coroner there has identified a man who was shot and killed during a reported burglary earlier this week. According to the coroner, 22-year-old Mickey Anthony Maxwell was one of several individuals who allegedly tried to burglarize a home there in southern Indiana. Chief Deputy Coroner Amy Miller said an autopsy would be performed today, but the cause of death is expected to be gunshot wounds. According to the Courier and Press newspaper, Maxwell allegedly entered this home with two other men on Tuesday afternoon. One of the residents inside the home had a firearm. Police were called about a burglary in progress about 1:45 Tuesday afternoon by, again, a resident of the home. Caller said that there were three individuals who broke into their home, that their son had shot one of them. Caller said they did not believe that the person who had been shot was alive. The two remaining suspects had fled the scene. Evansville Police Department spokesman Sergeant Anthony Ossaker says the resident who fired the shots has been cooperating with investigators. Authorities have not released their name. At this point, they've not been charged with the crime. And I would suspect that, you know, if the evidence adds up to what was reported on the 911 call, this individual will not be charged with a crime. Ossaker wrote in a release that during the interview, the resident explained that they were inside the home and they heard a loud noise. When they looked to see what that noise was, they saw three armed subjects forcing their way into the home, all three subjects described as black males wearing all black face masks and gloves. That is when the resident used, quote, their own handgun to fire towards the three men, striking at least one as the other two fled. This incident still under investigation. The two suspects who fled the scene have not been apprehended as of yesterday morning. We will keep our eyes on this story and bring you more information as it comes in. But at this point, again, all indications are this was a clear case of self-defense. Now, finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time will enable to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in Milwaukee who helped save the life of a toddler during an apartment fire earlier this week. More than 100 people ended up displaced by this fire, which raged through an apartment complex. Charlotte Davis and her fiancé, Alejandro Gonzalez, were on the balcony of their third-floor apartment, smoke filling the hallways there, and a woman on the fourth floor, one story above, started yelling out, "Catch my baby, catch my baby." Davis says Alex, her fiancé, was standing right there, so he caught the baby. She said he was scared. I would be too. Alex Gonzalez or Alejandro Gonzalez said, I really did not want to drop the baby. And he did not. Gonzalez said the mom tossed the child into his arms and then climbed down onto their balcony, which again was on the third floor of the apartment building. Gonzalez then handed the baby back to mom. He took a mattress from his apartment, threw it down into the courtyard below. And Gonzalez says she ends up tossing the baby, her baby, onto the mattress, and then she jumps off. I mean, again, just absolutely terrifying. But the mom is okay. The baby's okay. Alejandro Gonzalez and his fiance Charlotte Davis are okay. In fact, it doesn't sound like anybody was seriously injured in this fire. Although, again, more than 100 people forced out of their homes, at least temporarily. The fire chief in Milwaukee says it's going to be at least another week before some residents are able to return to their homes. And, of course, some residents are not going to be able to return because of the damage there. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help a baby in need. Alejandro Gonzalez there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we thank you for your very, very good deed and good save. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. Cody Wisniewski is going to be with us from FPC Action Foundation. He had an interesting piece of the Washington Examiner this week talking about how scrapping the ATF doesn't actually accomplish what gun owners really want, which is, again, fundamental root and branch reform of our gun laws. And in fact, Cody says, be careful what you wish for, because if the ATF goes away, but the underlying rules and regulations and statutes that they enforce do not, you could actually end up with an even worse situation than what we have right now. So we're going to talk with Cody about that on Monday. Be sure to check out BarryandArms.com throughout today, tomorrow, and the weekend. We're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member as well. Just use the promo code FIGHT when you sign up for your membership. You get 60% off, which is a great savings. You'll be supporting the independent pro Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms, but you'll also get some great benefits and ad-free experience. Depending on your level of support, you can join us for the VIP Gold live chats every Wednesday. You can get exclusive access to all kinds of stories, direct messaging capabilities across the Town Hall media, family of websites, discounts at the Town Hall store, and more. Again, just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you get big savings when you sign up. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Have a great weekend as well. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.